Welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Do you hear that, Earth? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, the official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron, your number one source for theories, news and discussion, and interviews from the books and the films like me, Rupert Grimm. I play Ron Weasley in the Harry Potter films. And now your host, John and Sue.
Doing the best we can, week two without Melvin. What? It's Pottercast 125.
Woo! Hey everyone, it's Sue.
What's going on?
And John.
It is Sue and me.
John.
John Dawlish.
That's right, Mr. Cannon.
Here with another installment of Pottercast, Buck 25. That'll buy you a Coke at my school, I think.
Yeah, it is. That's terrible. I remember when it used to be a quarter, man.
Oh. You don't remember when it used to be
a
quarter.
I do, too. I am way old, and it used to be a quarter.
It's true.
Inflation. It's all Fudge's fault. I blame him, the government.
Everybody's always blaming Fudge. But anyway, we've got an interesting show this week, because this one is all about the fandom, and it's the first of a series of What's Up, Fandom?
What's up?
And we are talking about the conventions, amongst other things, mostly the fan conventions, namely Portis, happening in Dallas, Texas, right, Sue?
Yes, it is, in July, and then in August, it's Terminus! Whee!
Terminus happening in Chicago. And we have the organizers from both of those events on. We have an interview with them. But before we go any further than that, we have to hear from our awesome friends at Borders.
Hey! Haven't read Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows yet? Don't worry, Borders is here to help. Pick up your copy of this summer smash hit soon. You won't be able to hide from the spoilers forever. You can count on Borders to have it in stock and ready to take home tonight, along with the audiobook version. Even if you've read the book, the Harry Potter fun doesn't have to end yet. Visit BordersMedia.com or click on the Borders banner at the top of the Pottercast page to find out more.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love the Borders.
I love Borders. I was just there, actually. You know what? I was looking for toys. Snake.
Really? I thought you had all the snake toys
in
here.
Well, I can't find Kung Fu Snake. P is gone AWOL. He's missing. Someone kidnapped him.
No way! Yes. When did this happen?
It's just been recent. I don't know where he's at. He's gone. Thinking,
oh no.
Something nefarious has happened to him. Oh, no.
Poor Kung Fu Snape. He's like a celebrity now on YouTube.
We'll find him.
As if he wasn't already one.
Snape, let's think. We can see all about Snape, though. You know, with big news of the week. You know what happened, John?
I don't know anything about what happened, because I'm not up on my Snape news.
Well, it's not about Snape, but we get to see Snape and Harry and Ron and Grop and everybody, because in the UK, the people have now are lucky to receive Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix DVD, although we in the United States have to wait.
I know, what's the deal? I guess we predicted wrong that they would change their mind.
And wrong. One more month to go, not till December.
I wait a whole month?
No.
I'm going to fly over to London before I wait a month.
I mean, this is hysterical, but because this is what the big news is. On the DVD, if you put your DVD on the extras, if you buy the two discs thing, I believe, there is a link that takes you to a special site, and you get to see a Half-Blood Prince sneak peek, two clips.
Whoa.
Two clips.
Clips of what? Anybody get to see that? Was there any chance it went, illegally on YouTube?
I literally timed it, and it literally took less than 3 hours for fans to have that up on YouTube.
No kidding?
No kidding. I timed it. I'm like, okay, here we go. And it was less than 3 hours. It was awesome. But, they're building the whole orphanage. There's an interview with Stuart Craig on it, and this is a spoiler, so if you want to wait until you get it in December, okay, stop listening. But Stuart Craig, our friend Stuart Craig, the production designer, and you can see he shows the sketches, and they built a street in London on the back lot there at Euston, and they're building this huge orphanage. I mean, goodness sakes.
They said that it was based on a building that they found, and I had to look at this concept art quite a few times, because at first I thought it was like this huge, university almost, but apparently it's just the building at the end of the row here is the orphanage,
and
the rest of it on the sides is like the London streets or whatever of England. I guess there's other cities than London over there,
but it just
I always say London.
It really did strike me as a very Dickens You know, I love Charles Dickens, so that kind of like, you know, and, but the thought that the fact is that they're spending this enormous amount of money building this set, I thought was really cool that they're going to put some serious time into that scene, because obviously that's so crucial, but I was like.
Totally. It's going to be an extremely awesome scene, and I just wish we could actually figure out who's going to be starring in that scene other than Mr. Ganon Dumbledore.
Yeah, we don't know. They still haven't bothered to announce who is playing young Voldemort, although we did get casting announcements on who is going to be Lavender Brown.
Yes.
Yes, her name is...
That was pretty huge.
It was pretty huge. Her name is Jessie Cave, and she's 20 years old. She's an older woman.
Look at Ron. Look at Roop.
I know. And we...
Oh, Roop will be fine.
Yeah, he'll be
she's
fine.
That guy.
And we also heard that Helen McCrory has been cast as Narcissa Malfoy.
Why does that name sound familiar?
Why does it sound familiar? Deja vu all over again. Wait!
Wasn't she originally cast as Molly Weasley?
No! She was cast as Narcissa's sister, Bellatrix, but she had to drop out because she was pregnant. Remember that?
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
I guess it's coming back to me.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, instead of casting somebody new, because, I mean, there have been a lot of names bandied about, they went back and they said, okay, well, you can't do Bellatrix. How about play your sister?
they had her in a folder. She was in the maybe folder for potential actresses.
I mean, seriously now. I mean, come on.
Well, I'm sure she'll do great.
I think so. She's a very accomplished actress, you have to say. I mean, she is, and she'll be fine. But I just thought, you know, that was just kind of funny. But, you know, so at least though, now we know we have pinned down that Narcissa is going to be there and Lavender. And on the other glimpses that we saw on the Half-Blood Prince scene, we also saw the cave. We saw Dumbledore in the cave.
Really?
Yeah, he was there. So
it was real quick, wasn't it?
Yes, it was real quick. He was there. And then we also saw that member on our, because our readers had sent in the reports from the Laycock filming. And Dumbledore's, what's that, a glove? Did you see it was this green hand?
I must have missed it.
There's a real quick shot of Dumbledore, and he like holds his hand up like he's grabbing his beard or something, the actor Michael Gambon, and he's stroking his beard. And you can see it's a green, it looks like a glove, more like a...
Cool.
Yeah, and I was like, wow. But you know,
that'd be cool.
I think so. We also, another sneak peek, we saw Wan's keeper uniform. So Quidditch is back, baby! Woohoo!
And they've upped the equipment or something?
Yeah.
They've got more padding on these guys now? It'd be more physical?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, the other sneak peek was an interview with a costume designer who's been with them for a long time, and she was talking about how she's like styled them up a little bit, and they showed the shot of Ron's uniform and Harry's uniform. So, and they have like, he's got like
very
a helmet.
Cool.
Yeah. And then the Slytherins have a new, you know, kind of stylish look, but then, you know, that's pretty cool.
They get to wear silk for their sporting events because they're just that fancy.
Then nothing but the best for those Death Eater wannabes, you know. There you go.
Totally.
Gotta work
totally.
It.
Gosh, was there anything else going on here cool in the news?
Speaking of Michael Gambon, I just want to say that he is camping it up. Because I can't, I have to say this because I know that every time we mention this, but...
Is Dumbledore still gay?
He still is.
Oh, go figure.
And he's doing knitting and he's having a good time with it. And David Yates said that Michael Gambon is a wonderful, or he was speaking about Dumbledore actually. He said he's a wonderful character, Dumbledore, graceful, wise, powerful, quirky, perfect sense of humor, loves knitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
I just find it quite... ironic and quite amusing that here we are after how many films with Gambon where he doesn't give a rat's nuts about the books and how Dumbledore is written in the books. It's just, you know, he just reads the scripts and goes home, doesn't watch the film and be done with it.
Yeah.
But now, oh, suddenly, new information, Dumbledore is gay and he's dancing around the sets and telling jokes.
I know. You know, it's like, okay, you know, but I mean, Mr. Yates goes on and says, you know, there's a jumble, the sexuality is just another thing, which is great. That's what we want.
Mm-hmm.
But then the more alarming note to me was a quote from producer David Barron, who said that Dumbledore would remain the character Michael Gambon has already established.
Oh, thank God. I would not want any discontinuity, you know, by him suddenly... You can clue it in, but whatever.
Oh, you know, it's just, I don't know. But then, you know, those of us are kind of like alarmed that, how dare you, Harry? Take away my knitting. You know, I can just see him. I don't know.
Shaking Harry by his knitting.
I don't know.
Crazy. Well, I will refer everybody back to episode 124 when we clued the fans in on how to accept Gambin and the five stages of
that was awesome.
Gambin's performance.
Yes. You just have to work through it, people. Work through it. No, yes. This is funny. Oh, so, okay, so they had the DVD release in London, and it was a big thing, and now we saw a whole bunch of new interviews, and among the little things that we've learned that Imelda Staunton is hoping to return as Umbridge for Deathly Hallows, which I think
I would hope so.
You watch her again on these clips, and you just get your...
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that you get on the DVD is a deleted scene, and of course, those already made that onto YouTube, too. I mean, within just boom.
Oh, geez.
There's a big surprise. And
come on, people.
And you can actually see there's an extended extended cut of her in the forest when she takes the, you know, and it's quite chilling, I actually thought. And I wish they had kept that whole scene. I thought it could have worked and just really, really got... the level of her.
Is there really only two deleted scenes?
Well, no, there's 10, but...
Oh, okay, good. I was going to say, because what's ABC Family going to run if there's not an extended version of this thing?
But I watch those all the time when they're on with it. They put them back in. I mean, the other day they had Chamber of Secrets on with all the deleted
scenes. I know. When are they going to put those to DVD?
Oh, from your lips
my ruddy
VHS
tape is getting worn the heck out.
I know. It's so much better. It's so much better, especially Chambers of Secrets.
It's just a fuller experience.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, you can pre-order now the DVD for those of us that have to wait more weeks until Warner Brothers decides, okay, Americans, the largest
I'm
market.
I'm sure there's a reason for it that is just, you know, way over our heads.
Yeah. Well, it's over my head because I can't. It makes no sense to me, but,
there are worse things in the world, I suppose.
There are. Oh, one more thing. Our friend Matt Lewis, he's an assistant director on Order of the Phoenix. I did not know.
What?
I know. That's what he said.
Good for him.
I know. Isn't that cool? I just think, you know.
We have to work on getting an interview with him then.
I think so. We can say, hey, Matt, give us a scoop.
I have to pick up the Matt phone.
Yeah, Matt phone. Is that how it goes? It doesn't go like, you know.
He throws the fat suit off, fixes his hair. Dashes down to the studio.
Gets off his... I hope he has good news for us about his hair in this new movie. I just am hoping because he...
Just let the poor kid, like, you know, not have to wear a fat suit to school every day.
I know. I mean...
It's hard enough to be Neville.
I know. Oh, you know, well, one more thing. I have to say this. Linda Lovegood, I love her. And her jewelry now is from Noble Collection. They make these beautiful prop replicas and... There's the radish earrings, and I'm just all excited about that.
That's sweet.
It is.
And one of her rings.
And her rings, and the butterbeer necklace. Now, what is the deal with that ring? What is that thing? Do you know what it is?
She likes to make the beaded jewelry. Those earrings aren't the only things that she's designed, and, you know, she has a whole slew of things that she wears on a regular basis, and it's cool stuff. And they let her wear the ring in the movie.
Yeah.
And I guess they really took a liking to it, too.
Yeah.
And put it up on the Noble Collection.
That's awesome. I know that is number one on my wish list. I'm telling you that right now. That even leaped ahead the Marauders map. I saw that.
That's cool.
I also want to just remind people, too, that Joe wrote that Tale of the Beetle of the Barb, which all proceeds are going to charity. The catalog is available now. You can order it from some of these online, and it's a 48-page has images and has excerpts of the text. So people are complaining, oh, we're never going to hear the new canon from Joe. Well, I think if you buy this catalog, you're going to get some of what she's selling in the charity auction. And all the proceeds from the catalog sale go to charity, too.
Good awesome. Job.
Yeah, very good. And awesome. I think the rest of the week has been pretty quiet, right, John?
Well, I think that's a hell of a lot to be happening for our lull between everything else.
Yeah, I think so.
We have a interesting week of interviews and a big old mailbag this week as well.
Yay, Kristen!
Woo-hoo! And Special K will be back, and we're taking your questions about what's going on with our crazy fandom today. All right, let's move on here now with our first interview with Becky from HPF, talking to us about Porter's Convention. So we're back again with another interview on our Fandom Week here at Podcast, and we are talking with Becky from the HPAF conferences, specifically this year the Portis Conference.
Yes. Hi, Becky.
Hi.
thank you very much for coming on with us. We have some questions for you, and I'm sure the fans are all getting quite curious about what's in store for them for Potter Conventions this year. So just tell us a little bit about what we can expect out of Portis this year.
Portis is going to be absolutely fantastic. It's going to be July 10th to the 13th in Dallas, Texas. We have a great central location, so Harry Potter fans from all over the country and the world can come and join us. We are going to be having a mix that is commonly found in HPEF events, a good mix of formal and informal programming. We have, for example, our Friday keynote luncheon with Dr. Henry Jenkins. He will be addressing issues related to the close of canon and how the fans react. We also will have the traditional informal activities like movies and Quidditch. We're bringing back water Quidditch, like what we had in Lumos.
Oh, that was fun.
Oh, yeah.
Very popular.
Yeah, John played that. That was funny.
We got a lot of positive comments on it. We're very excited that we're able to do it again, especially with the Dallas weather. It'll be nice and refreshing to be in the water.
I bet.
And we will also have one evening of indoor Quidditch where we'll be using a ballroom. So for those people who do not want to get their feet wet, they can play inside instead.
That sounds cool.
Oh, it's going to be great.
Your events are extremely well organized, I must say. They just have a lot of things going on. I mean, that just seems to me, I mean, how far in advance do you start working on planning all these things? I mean, do you start like the day that it ends, that last one ends? Or, I mean, I don't know. It just seems a lot of work.
Well, from event to event, we usually have different members on the planning committee. Most events start off about 2 years ahead of time, just from conception, formalizing a staff and a theme, and selecting a location. And then as we start getting closer, we look for feedback from prior events to see, you know, what we want to keep, what we want to get rid of, what really worked. And one of the really most helpful bits of information we get are the surveys that our attendees fill out at the end of each event. And we're able to take their criticism and put learn something from it. And so the next each event just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah.
You were actually just touching on my next question is what sort of things will be different about this year's convention for you guys compared to the previous ones? What things are you bringing back? What things are you letting go that might not have worked as well? And what will make this one stand out for fans?
Well, formal programming-wise, we're moving away from the luncheon panel and back to a keynote speaker. We will be announcing our Saturday keynote speaker very shortly, probably within the next week or two.
Okay.
Like I said, Dr. Henry Jenkins is going to be in on Friday, and we'll have one individual, again, speaking at the Saturday event. Other new activities is we're having some afternoon tea on both Friday and Saturday. This is a brand new event. We're basically looking to provide our attendees with just some quiet time to sit down with their friends, enjoy a bit of food and some conversation without the pressure of rushing from place to place.
Yeah,
that's definitely one thing that from my limited fan convention experiences, but the fans that do go are not always looking for the same thing as the other fans. Some people are real interested in, you know, going to the formal programming, the lectures, and some people are real interested in the Quidditch and the games, and some people are just looking to see their friends. And it sounds like, from what you've said so far, that there's going to be definitely a whole lot of chances to do all of those things.
Yeah, so one person, you know, who comes can do one or the other, even get a mix of both. Another new thing that we're doing this year, or rather expanding, is the common room. Our common room is going to be terrific. We have a great deal of space. Mm-hmm. We're going to continue some of the common room with rock performances, as well as speaker readings, as well as being able to provide, you know, a relaxing space where attendees can meet up and just get together. And, you know, that's what these events are all about.
Right. I have to say, we attended Prophecy, and the common room was a lot of fun for me just to go, just not just to hear the music, but I actually got a chance to meet a lot of new people that I hadn't met before, and I really appreciate that. And it wasn't so, you know, like I was trying to dash to another presentation because there were so many good ones, but it was just nice to be able to go have a spot to go and just, like you said, hang out. So I'm glad to hear that you're having these teas, because that sounds like a lot of fun too. Are they So is it just schedule time for people to just like stop and sit down and talk? Is that what these teas are? Or?
That's basically it. It's a chance to relax. So many people have problems finding a time to just sit down and eat too, and it provides another opportunity to get that, to get a bite and just relax rather than, conferences in general tend to be a little bit on the manic side. You're running from place to place. You don't sleep.
Yeah.
So it's something that's a little bit quieter, a little bit more subdued, but still can be enjoyed by our guests just with conversation.
I just was curious, because Prophecy was right after the book Deathly Hallows had come out, and we were still kind of just reeling from all this new things and everything that happened. It was a very emotional time. And now, how do you think, though, Portis will be this year now that we've had a little bit of time to absorb all of that? Do you think it'll be still as emotional now that we've had like closure, or do you think it'll be? What are your outlooks on Portis? The feeling there.
Well, I don't really think that we've had closure at this point because we're still experiencing these books as fans. It doesn't end until the day that we stop participating. And as long as there's people participating, there's always new stuff to go and explore. Now, it will be different. I think, enough time will have passed that we have digested what happened. And especially since J.K. Rowling keeps coming out with comments, we'll have more things to discuss and pick apart. And it's going to be a great opportunity to look critically at the novels and also at the fandom itself and how it's changed.
Yeah. That's a really good point you brought up, that the fandom still is ongoing. I think that there's been a lot of concern. Well, now the book's out, everything's going to end. That was like people like, well, what are you going to do now that your Harry Potter's done? And I'm like, oh, it's not done. And that's one thing you try to do at these conferences is showcase the different ways, the different creative outlets that our fans have, right?
You can look at things like Star Trek fandom. The show ended after 3 years, but it continued on and on and on and on. And, I expect the Harry Potter fandom to be continuing on in the same way for the years to come.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I wanted to step back a few years, actually, if I could, because a lot of our fans, a lot of the fandom lately has been very curious about how a lot of the inner workings of fandom organizations go and what sort of relationships they have with the powers that be, and how it is that they are able to do the things that they are able to do. As you guys have been doing these conventions since 2001, 2002,
2003 was Nimbus. 2003 was the first HPEF event. Yeah.
And what was if you recall, what was the goal, or who, what? I'm just trying to get a little bit of a history here of what was it that had you guys decide, well, maybe there could be a desire for a fan convention like this, and what was your mission at that point versus what your goal for conventions this year and years to come could be?
Well, I actually came into it with Nimbus. I found the event through Harry Potter for Grownups, that the Yahoo group. I was not really around for the forming of a group, but from what I've been told, it started out as the desire to have a meetup. A large group of people were communicating in depth online, and they wanted to get together to share their love, to continue what they were doing online, actually in person.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how we have the beginning of Nimbus now. I didn't really find fandom until after Nimbus. I went as a lurker. I was very quiet, didn't speak with very many people. And I was ended up kind of getting, talking with my roommate, who suggested, well, maybe we should put in a bid for an event, which eventually became Moonbox. And so I've basically been involved ever since then. I think the goals were basically the same. We want to have a forum for both in-depth study and discussion of these novels that have meant so much to all of us.
Yeah,
definitely. Is there was there ever any sort of guidelines or requirements of you guys to be allowed to have such a convention like this? Are there any sorts of things that need to be in your programming or aren't allowed to be present at these conventions? Or anything like that, or you guys pretty much have free rein for these things?
Well, our ultimate goal is to maintain a positive relationship with both Warner Brothers and the Christopher Little Agency. And, you know, we try to work within the framework that they set for us. You know, we're kind of in a crossroads right now. The landscape of being fans is changing, and it remains to be seen, you know, how things will change in the next couple of years.
Okay.
Yeah. You have academic program, we do learn it, but you also have the embracement of the fan art and the fan fiction and the movies and the, you know, videos and different, and they don't really frown on that. I mean, right? They just, that you have all these different facets of a fandom present at your conferences, right?
They're all elements of creative expression. You know, we're seeing greater variety of the way that people are expressing themselves and the way that they show their love for this universe that J.K. Rowling has created. You know, now we have Wizard Rock. We have, fan fiction's been around for a long, long time.
Yeah.
We have greater exploration of that.
Well, that's what I like about these things. I mean, because there's a lot of friends that I have made recently that are not involved in Harry Potter and are thinking, why on earth would you have these things? And if I show up, will I be bored? And I think the answer is no. Is that right? Would you agree with that?
I would completely agree about it. I mean, just the atmosphere, the environment that's created by these events, it's just so joyful. And, you know, you see people running towards each other to give hugs, and, you know, people who see each other maybe once a year, or this may be their only time, depending on how far they travel. So it's wonderful to see the relationships, the friendships that have been formed just from the interaction at these events. It's terrific.
You know, that's so true. I remember, because I just had such a great time at Lumos. I just had a fabulous time. And you get to wear your costumes. You can run around. I ran around my Hufflepuff thing the whole time, and I was like in heaven, you know. And I just think that we have this kind of outlet that we can all come together and express these conferences are just the perfect place for it. And you can meet people that I have met there that I have stayed in touch with. And I look forward to going to these events every year. And I just think, you know, thank goodness you all have these. These are just wonderful.
Oh, I'm glad you think so.
For the Harry Potter fan who's never been to a convention, what do they need to know now about how to sign up? What will it cost them? How old do they need to be? You know, is it for them? How big of a Harry Potter fan do they need to be? Can you give us a rundown on those kind of details?
I think any level of fan will be very happy with what they see, especially at Portis. The minimum age for attendance is 14. Individuals between 14 and 17 need to come either with a parent or guardian or a chaperone. Chaperones need to be at least 21, and we will have information up on our website on what paperwork needs to be filled out for that. The event is basically what you make it. If you choose to go to the informal event, go to the Wizard Rock concert, go spend time in the common room, you can make it to see that. If you like to go and have a purely academic conference experience, we can provide that as well.
Yeah.
You will definitely see hundreds and thousands of smiling faces around you. It's just, it's infectious. It is so terrific to be in the presence of so many like souls.
Yeah. Excellent. And what was that website for you guys this year?
It's www.porches2008.org.
Okay.
And registration is open, is that correct?
Is open. The event registration is currently $200. It covers the welcoming and leading fees, all formal and informal programming, and it also gives you the opportunity to purchase extra ticket events like the keynote luncheons, the teas, the ball.
The balls, those are always a great time.
The ball is going to be lots of fun. It's Saturday night. It's basically, you know, the last night that we're all there, people get dressed up in costume. They wear their formal wear. It is just an absolute blast.
Excellent. Very good. Very good.
That is great. Sounds cool. There was one more thing I did want to bring up. I understand that you guys have already been planning for future conferences,
and that
there may be one in particular that could be of interest to a lot of. A lot of roller coaster enthusiasts and theme park enthusiasts.
Well, first of all, in 2009, we have Level 2, which will take place in San Jose. But in 2010, we will have Infinitus, which is going to take place at the Universal Resort in Orlando, Florida.
Now, why would you pick such a place to have a convention?
They got some cool rides there.
Spider-Man's fun. Maybe, something about a theme park or...
Oh. That is going to be so awesome. I'll just say it right now. I mean, that theme park and having a convention at the same time will just be, woohoo, way cool.
It will be terrific. It will be terrific. Now, the hotel is the Royal Pacific in Orlando. They will be taking reservations starting, I have a date here, November 20th. You can call 866-360-7395 beginning that day to make your room reservations.
Way cool. Because you know what? People are going to jump on that, like, immediately because people are so excited about that theme park and going for this thing. I mean, I can't even... Everywhere people have asked me about this, so this is great, great news. That's wonderful.
And the other great thing, too, is that these Universal people are very excited to bring the fans in, too.
Oh, they are terrific. I went on a site visit this past weekend to go check out the hotel and meet with the Universal representative. And they're so thrilled to have us. It's going to be terrific.
Yeah. And the theme park, and that sort of thing will be a topic of an upcoming podcast, an upcoming What's Up with the Fandom themed podcast, all about the theme park and just what we know and what we're waiting to find out and just how excited everybody is connected to this theme park, Universal, the fans. Just it's going to be awesome, and I'm sure this Infinitus is going to be the first of many, many, many gatherings for Harry Potter fans. So, and you guys are certainly well equipped to kick it off. Awesome. So, very much looking forward to all that.
So are we.
Yes. Well, thank you, Becky. This has been really, I love conventions, and I know it's a lot of work putting all these events together, and just we appreciate you coming on and tell us about it. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Sue, so I guess we have a couple interviews tonight.
Yes, we do. Some exciting people. Nice guests are coming up, and we got somebody really cool next, I think.
Awesome, yeah. So we got, we're talking about conventions this week, amongst other things, and we have with us Amy from Terminus, amongst other conventions, Phoenix Rising. I know a lot of you guys went down there, and Terminus is coming up this year as well.
Yeah.
So it's welcome, Sue, and all everybody out there, podcast land, Amy.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Amy. Woohoo! How you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing awesome. Doing awesome. We're surviving here without Melissa, who I guess as of recording moment right now is overseas on a little scavenger hunt of sorts.
Yeah, sort
of. Sometimes you have to muddle through.
We're trying. We're doing what we can. We wanted to have you on to talk about what there is for a Potter fan to be doing this year, and what better thing for fans to get involved with than a place where they can all come together and hang out and enjoy Harry Potter at a convention. And you are one of the operators for the Terminus convention, is that correct?
I am. I'm one of the lead event organizers for Terminus, and I'm also the CEO of Merry Consensus.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. So what can you tell us about, I'll be very broad, but what is the first thing you would like to tell us about what fans could be looking forward to for Terminus this year?
Our goal with Terminus is to put together a 5-day event, actually 6 days if you add our optional rock concert on the beginning, that really focuses on the community that has grown around Harry Potter. Mostly the fan community, but we also welcome the academic community, the professionals that use Harry Potter in their classrooms and in their businesses. And we really want to bring everyone in from the four corners of the world to be a Harry Potter community for one weekend in Chicago.
That's fabulous. We should point out that Terminus is being held in Chicago, Illinois on August 7th through the 11th. Is that right, Amy? Yes.
It is, at the Hilton Chicago Hotel right on Michigan Avenue.
Oh, awesome.
Excellent. It is beautiful. If you've not been there, I cannot recommend Chicago enough. It is a fabulous city. And I mean, I was kind of curious why you chose Chicago, just that, like a Harry Potter. I mean, what you kind of, why would you think that? I mean, you know,
I have been waiting to do a conference in Chicago since 2003. I started planning the Witching Hour in 2003. I grew up in West Michigan, so I grew up doing weekend trips to Chicago. And it's always been such a fantastic, exciting, friendly, community-minded town that I really wanted to use that as a basis for bringing Harry Potter fans in for a community event.
Yeah.
Interesting. How long have you been at the Harry Potter conventions then? When was the first one?
Since 2002.
2002.
It's kind of taken over my life. I was legal counsel for Nimbus way back in 2002.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow.
And then I've helmed 3 Harry Potter conferences since then, including Terminus.
Yeah. We should point out that we were down at Phoenix Rising, which you helped run too, in the fabulous city of New Orleans, which was fabulous, just wonderful. And those are extraordinary. If you've never been to a Harry Potter convention, these are amazing, amazing events. There is always something going on. I mean, literally at every hour, pretty much, there's amazing.
We do. We keep you busy.
And you think, well, what is it that a fan can do at a Harry Potter conference? Can you give us a little thing of, like, what you have going on?
Absolutely. We try to build conferences that each attendee can kind of make an individual experience out of. Because our demographic is so different. You know, an academic might want to come in and do just an academic conference. A professional might want to come in and do professional development opportunities. You might have a fan who wants to do nothing but games and play Quidditch and play the Quest and things like that all weekend. You might have someone who comes in for the podcast or someone who comes in for the Wizard Rock. But we also give such a variety of experience that people can try a lot of new things. You know, you can try a new podcast or you can attend a few panels and see what you like.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So is this pretty much geared for, like, really hardcore Harry Potter fans, or is this, would this be enjoyable for people who, you know, aren't necessarily into, you know, real intense on the online fandom, like if they were just tagging along with somebody who was?
Definitely both. And I think the way that it differs a little bit is we tend to see more hardcore online Harry Potter fandomers participate more. You know, you'll see them playing Wizard Rock, or you'll see them presenting or reading their fan fiction. And when casual fans come in, they come in generally to try the experience and to see what it's like and to talk about Harry with this wealth of community that they didn't even know was out there. So we've had both attend our conferences, and both have really enjoyed it, sometimes for very different reasons.
Interesting.
I think it's really wonderful. I mean, I remember going to my first one. I really wasn't sure what to expect, but I was not only impressed with the quality and level of some of your presenters, you know. I mean, some of these papers that people present are just really well thought out. They're very articulate and they're in depth, and you can think, wow, that seems really, you know, like going to school, but it's not. And then you can also take it in a light, fun, more casual. You have like round tables and you can just sit and talk. You can talk about Snape. You can, I mean, Lord knows you can talk about Snape forever, but you know, but I mean, I just was kind of curious though. I mean, so you have this different, this range of things, but now that we have Deathly Hallows, does that change the way you're going to present the conference, or, I mean, how does that
it
affect?
It doesn't really. Although we are encouraging a lot of our presenters to consider looking at a closed canon topic. You know, how does it change, you know, how J.K. Rowling relates to the fandom? How does it change how you read the text? That sort of thing. But aside from that, I mean, this is meant to be an exploration of Harry. And even though we know how Harry's journey ends, we don't know how all of our journeys with Harry end.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So
mine's not ending.
Beat goes on.
Yeah, it does, babe. It sure does. Rock and roll. Okay, everyone break into.
You know, and a lot of our promotionals say, you know, one series, a million journeys, continue the adventure. Because that's what we're doing.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that, you think it's a perfect way, though? We were talking about the fandom, this podcast, and there's been such an emotional, I mean, our fandom is just kind of like going, whoa, right now. But, you know, I mean, I just think these conferences are ideal to have fans come together, and you get to meet new people from around, literally around the world, right?
I mean, you do. Well, and I have to tell you, I got so verklempt when I was writing the website, because Terminus very much is about, you know, Harry's journey is over, but we can still enjoy our journey with Harry. And I was just going, I can't make this Maudlin. I want to cry. But we still get to journey with Harry, even though he's done.
How did you come across the name Terminus for this one?
Because it's the end of a journey. It's the end of Harry's journey, but it's also the end of each of our attendees' journeys to come to Chicago for the event.
Okay.
Pretty cool. You know, and full disclosure, I have to be honest, I'm going to be participating very heavily at Terminus.
And we're so excited.
Not that I didn't squee like about a, like mad on the show before, but okay, I'm just like, okay. But you know, what really, really attracted me to this, I'm one, first of all, thank you. I just, an extraordinary honor, and I'm just overwhelmed by it, but is that this conference and on all the conferences this year seem really trying really, really hard to try and embrace the fandom and bring in all different kinds of, you know, we have the fan arts, there's the, you know, the fan fiction writers, there's all kinds of different things that are going on in addition to the academic programming. And that's what really, like you said, they're coming from four corners of the earth, they're four corners of the fandom too, and I just think that's really cool. Like, so you mentioned something like a Wizard Rock thing. What is that?
We are doing a 12-hour, 25-band Wizard Rock festival day before the conference.
Woo! That's awesome.
That is intense. So that's something that is some sort of additional registration to the conference?
It is. It's an additional $20 for attendees. And if we don't sell out tickets to attendees, we'll make them available to the public.
Okay.
But we really wanted to feature Wizard Rock. And it's hard to feature Wizard Rock during the conference because everybody gets so excited about Wizard Rock.
Yeah.
And we thought about doing it the day before so we could really focus our efforts on Wizard Rock so everybody could pay attention to Wizard Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to be involved in the music industry, and once you've got three bands involved, it's not that much harder to get 25 bands involved.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you got almost everything set up.
So here we are with an optional 6-day of Wizard Rock.
That'll be really cool.
It's so fun because, like, you know, I'm older, I admit it, but, you know, it's like, yeah, okay, I love, like, you know, maybe because my babysitter when I was growing up was, like, into the Woodstock kind of era, you know, she's from there, but I love to go to those all-day events, and they're probably a lot more common than they are in the UK than they are over here, but the paloozas, and so I thought this whole idea of having a one-day Wizard Rock concert was just, like, a dream come true. I mean, you got Harry Potter and rock and roll. I mean, bring it on.
And it's fantastic.
Awesome.
Well, and the Wizard Rock community has been amazing. They've been so supportive of what we want to do, and they're so excited to be involved on this level.
But that's what's so great about our fandom is that we're constantly evolving. We're bringing these new things. It doesn't say that Wizard Rock is more important than, say, Tolkien or the fan art or, you know, the videos or anything. I mean, that's what's so great about it is our diversity. I really believe that is our strength as opposed to our differences. I know that sounds cliche, but that's what
Well, fandom is so creative, and that's why we picked an entire night of our conference. And this is the podcasting track night, actually, because we consider podcasting a fabulous fandom creativity project. But we're devoting an entire night of our conference to fandom creativity because it's important. It's important to us, and it's important to the fandom.
Podcasting. Well, I like that. What do you think about podcasts, John?
They're not too bad, I guess. I mean, if that's your thing.
Yeah.
Well, aside from this huge day of Wizard Rock, what else would people who, say, previously attended Phoenix Rising, is there anything going to be new this time around? Anything that, any new ideas you've had or things you're abandoning from the previous conventions? Or what's going to make this one different?
I think fandom participation, actually, is going to make this one different. I think that Phoenix Rising, in a lot of ways, for us, was a testing ground, and people were kind of coming out to see how we would do, how our conference would work out, and that sort of thing. And I think this time, they're not as reluctant to participate. I think we've got a lot of people really excited about submitting programming, or participating in the gallery, or playing Quidditch. That, for us, is what really turns a good conference into a great conference. Because, you know, I'm a lawyer. You know, I can present on legal topics. But I don't write fan fiction. I don't play Wizard Rock. I don't draw fan art. You know, I'll go down and I'll rough Quidditch.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's only so much that our staff can put together. But we've had such a fantastic outpouring of support from the fandom this time that I really think the participation is going to be extraordinary. And that makes an extraordinary concert for everyone else.
I'm just so excited this year to be getting to all these things, because so many of my friends right now, a lot of them that I've become closer friends with through going to these conventions, you know, they're just so excited to see each other again. And that's one of the greatest things about these conventions, is that, you know, it gives people a reason to come together, and it gives them so much to do at these things. And the other cool thing about it is that, you know, we've gotten some emails before, and we tend to get them fairly regularly from people who are Harry Potter fans, and, you know, their friends, you know, around home don't always get it. They don't, like, why Harry Potter? Why are you so crazy about all this?
Yeah,
and
are you kidding?
It's
my friends don't get it.
So when we have a convention, everybody can get together, and they can be themselves, and they can be Harry Potter fans and not be embarrassed about it, and and the conventions welcome everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The whole point of this for us is to bring everybody together as a community and celebrate the books that brought us all together in the first place.
Right.
Excellent. So there's one more thing I did want to bring up. There has been word from other places, other sources, other shows that for whatever reason your convention perhaps is not is only interested in a particular kind of Harry Potter fan, or you know, is not interested in some sort of Harry Potter fans. Is there? It seemed a little off to me, because I remember Phoenix Rising, and I'm aware of the rules for registrants needing to be of a certain age or otherwise have a chaperone. Can you clarify any of this stuff for us?
Sure, absolutely. I think that there's been some misinterpretation out there, and certainly we have age restrictions, like every other Harry Potter conference that I know of has certain age restrictions or focuses on a certain demographic, like families. You have to be 14 in order to attend at all, and that's based on federal regulations that limit online communications with people under 13.
Right.
So if you have to be 14 to come to the conference, by the time we start communicating with you, it's usually a pretty good shot that you're already 13.
Mm-hmm.
We also require people between 14 and 17 to have a chaperone, and that's, again, for legal requirements, because you're not legally an adult until you're 18. You can't enter into a contract. You can't reserve a room in a hotel, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But aside from the age restrictions, we definitely welcome all sorts of attendees. And not only do we welcome all sorts of attendees, we encourage all sorts of attendees to participate. One of our most popular presenters at Phoenix Rising was 16. And she brought in this amazing presentation about the Hogwarts castle, and everybody thought she was fantastic. So unlike a lot of conferences, we don't have educational requirements for presenters.
Right.
You don't need to be a well-known fanfic writer in order to submit your fanfic. You don't have to be an athlete to play Quidditch. We really
I don't know
welcome
how many of us are athletes.
We really welcome participation on any level, and we welcome all types of attendees as long as you meet the age requirements.
Yeah, because that age thing, you know, that you're right, that is for pretty much every conference that I've ever heard of. The only thing I was
a
never
lot of
clear.
Them you have to be 18 to even attend.
I think there was one over the summer out in England that you needed to be needed 18 straight up.
Yeah, and generally that's for legal reasons. Sometimes that's also for educational reasons. This really is a conference designed. It's basically a weekend of Harry Potter College. And we want to make sure that our attendees are ready for a weekend of Harry Potter College and all that college comes with.
Sure.
So, you know,
on the same
there
token,
will be bars at this conference.
Yeah. Well, totally. But, you know, also, like you said, there is, you know, a plethora of other activities for people to get into.
And for high school students, it's really something that the student and their parent or their guardian needs to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I said, we had a 16-year-old presenter who was phenomenal. I know a 16-year-old who comes to these conferences with a friend who's over 21 that her parents have met, totally fine. I've also talked to parents who have come to these conferences
right.
and said, you know, I had a great time, but my 14-year-old isn't ready for this. You know, so really for us, when you're 14 to 17, it's really an individual decision for you and your parents.
Yeah. I think you're right about that. I mean, it's not a blanket statement against younger people, because certainly, you know, there is so much you could get out of coming to these things where, you know,
right.
if you think about it on your own, you know, this is as much of it as an educational thing. It's a chance to meet new Harry Potter friends and to make new Harry Potter memories and to do all sorts of fun things. So, you know, everybody should definitely check it out. And your website, and I've never seen a convention website that didn't cover pretty much everything that was going to be there. So there's no excuse not to know what.
We're pretty verbose.
Yeah.
No, it's really well done. It's easy enough. It's terminus2008.org if you're looking for it. And registration is open, right, Amy?
It is open. At the moment, it's $160. That covers all 5 days of the conference, including our arrival dinner, our departure breakfast, our Bon Voyage ball, whole nine yards, except the keynote presentations, our Quidditch tournament, our trivia tournament, and the rock concert. And those all have individual additional costs, mm-hmm. like a meal or a T-shirt. So we have to charge a little bit more for those.
Great.
And then your hotel room cost is obviously a part of, you know.
Yep. The hotel room cost, it's $169 a night for up to four people.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be surprised if you can find something cheaper within walking distance, because we got a great rate at the hotel.
Right.
My understanding is the rack rate is about double that.
Oh, God.
It is. I was going to say, when I first heard about where you were holding it, I'm like, oh, man, okay, that's easily $300 a night, you know.
Fantastic hotel.
It's
when
gorgeous.
I was in Chicago after law school or during law school, they put us up in that sort of hotel.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. I mean, I used to go all the time for holiday shopping, and I would just go there, and it's gorgeous. You're lucky.
But it's right there on Michigan Avenue. It's right across from Grant Park. You can see Lake Michigan from the windows.
Awesome. Squeak. Sorry. Excited.
It's okay, Sue. I do that too.
Yeah. Okay, good. See, I'm not alone. Yay.
That's awesome. Well, I think that is about all the time we have for the
thank
moment.
Thank you guys so much. You know, and I hope that we see a lot of your listeners there next year, because we're really excited about it.
Well, I do too. I mean, there's so much time for our fandom, and this is another way for our fans to come together, like you said, see old friends, and these events are just wonderful.
For us, this is just as much a celebration of the fandom for us as it is the celebration of the book.
Rock on. I love that. Yes.
Well, thanks so much for coming on with us, Amy.
Well, thank you guys. This has been fantastic.
Thanks, Amy.
Oh, mail's here.
It's only for mail, isn't it?
But I never get mail.
Let's open it.
The mail's here.
Mail time.
Oh, great. Thanks.
Mailbag time. Here we are. It's the mailbag.
Mailbag.
With Special K.
Hello, all.
Yay.
She is here, she is there, and she's here today for mailbag time.
I think I have strep throat, though, so I sound kind of weird. Do I? Good.
Oh, normal Special K to me.
Fabulous. Fantastic.
All righty. Well, we asked you guys to send us some voicemails that we can chat about them, and I signed on Skype and noticed that there was 176 that have yet to be listened to, and we didn't want to sit through them for very long tonight, so we picked about, eight or nine here, and we have some emails to go through, too.
Awesome.
So let's play the first one here, and this is from Jeff.
Hi, Pottercast. This is Jeff, or Jeff HP, fan from the Leaky Lounge. Pretty frequently on the show, you guys have talked about how perhaps Michael Gambon really does play the character well after Deathly Hallows came out, because he seemed really angry. But really, do you believe this? Seems to me that when Dumbledore was talking to Snape in the manner he was only speaking in that way because of the fact that Snape did not know of the entire plan of Harry's search for the Horcrux. In the chapter of King's Cross, Dumbledore continues to be a kind and wise figure in Harry's life. I just wanted to share my thoughts on this and the fact that my perspective has not changed on him since Deathly Hallows was published. Thanks, and I'd love to hear your thoughts.
My thought on this, for those of you who haven't listened to everything I've ever said in my life, is that I always figured, even before Deathly Hallows,
that everybody who assigns Dumbledore this grandfatherly, cute little old man twinkle in his eye, you know, were setting themselves up for something, because somebody has to pull the strings to lead the opposition to somebody as manipulative as Voldemort. And it's got to be, you know, the White Wizard here to be the one to do it. And I figure all along that he wasn't interfering with Harry's danger in the early books because he was training this poor kid and seeing what he was capable of doing and getting him ready to face more difficult trials. And we see that Dumbledore really come out in Deathly Hallows when he's talking to Snape and he's doing his ringleader act. You know, I think that he's still a cool, interesting character. I just don't think he's just a sweet little old man at all.
All good thoughts. I think you're absolutely right. I think he was doing what he thought he needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
While his actions may not have always been heroic, I think his overall his goal was he was trying to save the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and all through the books, there are things that he just won't let Harry know, and he won't let other people know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he had to do that. So, yeah, I think you're right. I don't think it did change my opinion overall, even though there were moments where I did a lot of name-calling as I was reading the last book.
Yeah.
You know, actually for me, going back, I've started rereading the series, and I found him to be a much more sympathetic character after I know this now, and I understand the true enormity of the pressures on him.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because I'm just kind of a wimpy kind of person, but I just kind of understood that the greater good, and someone has to make that horrible, crappy call because it had to be done. And that is the worst thing of all when you're in a position, in a no-win situation, essentially, almost. I mean, you have to do these unthinkable things. But so I just want to become more sympathetic, actually. It's just...
Well, Sue, you're not wimpy. For the record, everyone, Sue has a gigantic heart. So I think that she recognizes how difficult all of that had to have been for Dumbledore. I haven't had a chance to reread. How far are you into it?
I'm now starting Chamber of Secrets. This will be the second time I've read the book. Woohoo!
Oh, wow.
You've only read Chamber of Secrets once previously?
It's true. I only read it once.
We're going to get emails about that, so...
I know. I'm okay. I should have missed these things, but you know...
I won't tell everybody how many times I've read the books.
Well, you know.
I think that
Sue,
has
are
to
you
decimal.
Listening to it?
No, I have not listened to this yet, so... No.
Sue!
I know.
Shame. John, do you know how many times you've read it?
I think I've read every one at least two, and I've listened to them all at least once. Some of them I've read more than once. Some of chapters I've read lots of times because they're awesome, like Dumbledore versus Voldemort. I read that one out loud once. I felt like a total dork, but it was fun. Nobody was in the room. I hope.
You read a whole book out loud? Or
I read that
chapter
out loud.
Well, I love reading out loud. I have no problem with that.
I did too.
Well, I'm not reading. I mean, if I was reading to somebody like my nephew, then absolutely. But I was in my room and I was getting into it.
John, I'll get you a little teddy bear friend that you
I've got stuffed animals, thanks.
And you can read to them and just pretend, you know.
Yeah.
Or we can always send Mushka down there, and I'm sure she'd love to hear that.
Yeah, you know, I said read, not shriek in terror.
Yeah, what were you doing to this cat? I understand Melissa's cat's terrified of you.
Yeah, no, that's probably vice versa there. I need to carry around, you know, protection in the form of a squirt bottle.
Yeah, so you know what I think?
What's that?
I think that Mooka could kick Dalek's ass. I'm sorry, Delicious.
No, you didn't even get a single one of those words right. That's how wrong that statement was.
But you know what? I totally think that Dolish could get pwned by a cat, too. Especially her cat, because, you know, that cat is fierce, let me tell you.
She could kick a Dalek's ass and Dalish's
ass. Who's Dalek? You're thinking garlic.
Everyone out there who watches Doctor Who, raise your hand right now.
Okay, here we are. On radio.
Feel those hands?
No, I don't.
It's audio. No drap. No visual.
You know, I think that we have to play our next one, which is highly appropriate to our current conversation.
Hi, Pottercast. This is Ashley, also known as Sethet, on the board. I have a very important question, and this has to go to John. So since Dawlish was pwned by Mrs. Longbottom in book 7, if Dawlish and Grubbly Plank had to battle one another, who do you think would win? Just curious. Anyway, thanks, guys, and sorry you were out last week, but hopefully it'll be a great show next week. Talk to you soon. Bye.
I think this is the most obvious question anyone's ever asked. Of course he would beat magical creatures carrying Grubbly Plank, as cool as her name is. That does not endow her with or comparable abilities. Just because she's got a cool name and because she can take care of magical creatures. If it was like a creature battle like Pokemon and they wanted to, you know, call upon their most treasured magical creatures, I would presume Grubbly Plank has more in her arsenal. But dueling wizard duels, and don't even get me started on the fairness of the situations that Dawlish and Mrs. Longbottom fought.
Okay, well, here is a sprightly woman who smokes a pipe and wears a monocle.
Sure.
She would kick his butt.
Well, because she dresses goofy, she's more powerful.
I think she just takes no prisoners. That woman does not take any prisoners.
She's a female Mad-Eye Moody.
I have to concur with Stu.
I mean, if they ask us who win Dawlish and a flubberworm, you guys would say that friggin' flubberworm just a piece.
No, I mean, I think he could take care of, like, you know, spineless kind of creatures. He could defeat them, but, you know, I'm just saying.
Magical invertebrates are fine for Dawlish.
I don't know. Dude, those flubberworms can roll pretty fast.
All right. What do we have next here?
Hey, Pottercast. This is Ashley, also known as Chocolate Is Not for Breakfast on the Lounge. I just wanted to call in and say that after the book has come out, I've ignored everything that J.K. Rowling has said about all of the characters. I think that they're literary characters, and if she is going to write a book saying things that they have done in their futures, then I will totally pay attention to it. But if she's going to be sitting on, you know, being interviewed and then say, oh yes, this happened to this person and then this happened to this person, I'm not going to pay attention to that. I mean, these are literary characters. They are made through these books, and that's how they're real to me. They're not real by her saying that things about them are true. It's by context of them being in the story that makes it true to me. So hearing Dumbledore is gay, it means nothing to me because it could have been true in the book anyway. I've heard people say it before because, you know, there were those Grindelwald fics right after the book, and even though I didn't believe it, you know, it was something that I considered. Now I have to think it, I have to sit there and believe it, and I can't come up with my own reality for what the extra pieces of the puzzle are in the books, because there's nothing that's going to be added literary-wise to the piece. All that can be added comes from me and comes from my own imagination of who Neville marries or who everybody gets together with in the end. And I think she's really starting to take away from that, and I don't like it at all. So that's just what I wanted to say and what I wanted to add to my thoughts about the fandom. So thanks a lot. I hope you guys are having a great day.
Well, first of all, I have to own up to something. I've read very few transcripts and I've listened to very few discussions on what she talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, it's not at all been because of lack of interest. I've just had a very busy last month or so.
Mm-hmm.
So that said, I was talking to some friends about it, and one actually, Jo's revelations have actually kind of diminished her enjoyment of the book. She said right after the series finished, she wanted to jump onto forums and discuss it, and pretty soon, she got to the point where everything she would say, someone would respond with, well, clearly you didn't listen to what Joe said at such and such event on such and such date, and what you think is wrong. And she, you know, she feels like what we need to know should be in the books.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she had a good point. I don't know. What about you guys? How are you? Do you know everything Joe has said about every character? Where are you?
It's a very tricky thing. I mean, I've tried to stay up on it, but
yeah.
I mean, I think there's just as much crazy little-known facts that are actually in the books, too, that can be used to argue points that most people skim over.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, it is at least in the book at that point, and it's not on a transcript on a website, and it's not like you had to be there at that book signing.
So it's, right, it's exactly.
Because we love the people that are fans, like, on that obsessive level where they mm-hmm. need to know middle names of grandparents and this and that, you know, they'll eat up everything she will say. But I could see where it would be frustrating for people who just want to argue things about the books and have debates and not be in the know, because regardless of how many times they've read the book, they've not seen every single transcript that she's talking about.
Exactly, yeah. Now, you know, on the flip side, it fills my fangirl little heart with glee to hear some things. You know, it's like, oh, that's what happened to that character. I mean, on the other side, I think a lot of it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I'm not really adamantly one way or another, but I really do understand people wanting to ignore what she's saying.
Yeah.
Sue, what do you think?
Well, the fact that Cho has gone to marry a muggle doesn't take away from what she ended up, you know, stepping up to the plate, or
yeah.
more importantly, that a Hufflepuff now runs Leaky Cauldron doesn't make it any less more fun about Neville or Hannah.
Flip that right in.
That's right. I have said this many times on the show. I am a Lord of the Rings fan, and I have craved all those background knowledge, and it did not take away from me to the story itself of what happened to Frodo and Aragorn I don't care that, I mean, I love finding out what the whole family, the history of the elves were, of Elrond and all those guys. That's fabulous, but it didn't take away from the story to me. So, and those were things that I learned in later books that Tolkien later wrote, and those didn't really diminish.
I think there's a difference.
Well, yeah,
I'm not talking about the books, though, like Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a difference in between talking about somebody's future.
Yeah.
Versus going back and talking about something that was happening parallel to the stuff that was in the actual books. And I think that the only thing that she actually did with that is the Dumbledore gay announcement. Because then you can go back and argue and, you know, reevaluate motivations and things. But
I actually don't think that changed anything in the story myself.
I agree.
I mean, it hasn't for me. I mean, I know some people are saying, like, oh, well, that's why he was so soft on Grindelwald and this and that.
He had a great love for Grindelwald, and I don't think it matters whether that was platonic or romantic.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and actually, this is, speaking of, someone had written in, expressing disappointment about her revelation about Dumbledore, and had said, can you imagine Tolkien writing Gandalf as gay? And my response was, I said, well, statistically, it's probably unlikely. However, there's nothing in there really to me to suggest his sexuality one way or another. So certainly, conceivably, I could see that. And his response was, well, you don't know anything about Tolkien, and you know, he was very about his belief system. And I responded, and I said, yeah, you're right, I really don't. But should I have to know that to read the books?
Exactly.
And I think that's getting, you know, this is something,
yeah.
Do we have to know what Joe thought about all these characters to read the books and take them for what they are? And I say absolutely not.
Well, no, it's just a matter of where you're discussing this stuff and with
yeah.
who and what your goal in that conversation is. And like I said, the differences between the kind of revelation she's making, most of them are in the future, years past, you know, when the canon stopped, or, you know, maybe before the epilogue. What are they getting so upset about that they can't enjoy a conversation about, other than what so-and-so ended up doing with their life?
You know, we've had some people write in recently and say, did I hear this about this character? And my response has been, you know, gosh, I don't know, I really... I've listened to a few things that she has said, and I certainly respect her. I think she's had all this inside her for so long, she's just kind of bursting to let it go.
Sure.
A lot of people love it, and more power to them. They should enjoy it.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people like, wow, I have no idea. You know, you'll have to Google that, or, I mean, search Leaky, see what you can find.
I mean, it's just a matter of being nice about it, you people out here. You know, no one likes a snooty Harry Potter fan that's going to brag about something. So if you do get into it with somebody or mention something that they have not heard because they haven't heard that chat or whatever, you know, don't be a, you know, jerk about it. Just be like, oh, you know, she actually did elaborate on this. And the other person, I would imagine, if it's not done in a snooty way, they'd be like, oh, really? That's cool. Where can I hear about
yeah.
that. Because if they're having a chat about it at that point, they're probably at that obsession level where they would be interested in what Joe says
mm-hmm.
if they're presented with that information. But no one likes to feel like they're, you know,
yeah,
in the know.
Certainly.
It just makes me sad, though, that people say, well, these books are ruined. I would hope they would not let this other knowledge take away from it. Because when the moment you went and you first read that Dumbledore was killed and the terrible feeling you felt, why is that taken away from you now because you've learned about
exactly.
Or why was that joy taken away from you when Harry first won, you know, with his snitch, you know? It's just all these things that he did not become a great Quidditch player after that. I mean, why is that just taken away from you? Those moments should remain singular in that moment, and those are for yours forever. They're in your head. Those moments are yours.
That's what my friend did, is she just kind of backed away and to give it some time to settle down, because the fact of it is, even though we're hearing a lot of things now, at some point, this is going to die down, and people would be left with these great books on their shelf.
Yeah.
And it's not really going to be such front page news, you know, what Joe said about Neville or Draco or really, you know, anyone else. We'll just be left with the books.
Yeah.
The same way with, you know, Tolkien. I haven't read The Silmarillion. Did I say that right? I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I haven't studied him as a writer, but I sure enjoyed the hell out of the Lord of the Rings books.
Yeah.
Book, excuse me. Novel. It's one novel.
It's hard. There's three parts, but there's, yeah.
Three parts, one novel. I'm enough of a geek to know that.
I'm not.
But, you know, I also wonder, though, how much of the anger is actually spurred on by those who did not have their stories come true, or the way the story that they were hoping to happen come true in Deathly Hallows, and how much is that has colored some of the perceptions, the anger right now.
It seems like a different kind of anger, though. It seems like they're being angry at being teased at not being as big a fan as somebody else.
Oh. Well,
that's how I'm interpreting it anyway.
Yeah, but, you know, that brings up a whole nother...
Yeah, I guess kind of me.
I remember discussions from long ago where people got really nasty. And it's stuff like, I have 2 degrees in English, and so therefore I know what I'm talking about. And, you know, these characters, well, blah, blah, blah. And you find yourself getting really pissed off over this theoretical discussion. So... yeah, that's a good point, Sue.
Let's hop on to another one. We got a point to get through.
Hey, guys. My name is Anna. Well, you guys always ask us if you have any fun stories about the fandom. Well, you guys tell us like 10 every week, but I was just wondering if there was a particular story that really marked you in this whole thing. I would be very happy to know about it. Thanks a lot, guys. Keep on the good work.
Oh, of course we have stories. Lord, we've been here for how many years?
Oh, I have lots of stories.
Let's hear one of your stories, so I think I know where this is going.
Let's talk about the glories of the great house of Hufflepuff, shall we?
Oh, we knew it was going there.
Okay, my first joint, you know, really big outing in the fandom was at the first convention I went to was Lumos. I did not get to go to Witching Hour, and I was very disappointed by that, but going to Lumos was an extraordinary thing, and I got to be part of something known as a Hufflepuff parade, the beginning of the thing. And not only did I get that, but I got to be at the back with them as like a little place of honor. I was escorted by Cedric Diggory. I mean, let me tell you what.
It was terrifying.
I squeed at Death Eaters who tried to attack our happy little parade and cast evil upon our joy, and I squeed, and they ran away. And that is a lesson that joy and happiness will always overcome the darkness. So there. Oh, Hufflepuff. It was awesome. We had these like pom-pom things. They were yellow and black, or, you know, happy colors.
Yeah.
Puff colors. And we were just wore them around our necks. And my two friends that I had hoped that would be there to help share and bask in this glory. And where was Mr. John Noe? Where was he?
Probably taking a nap.
You were taking a nap. Not there.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, you would think if there's a Hufflepuff parade, everybody would think that John would be right there to take it all in as well. But
It was awesome because people were like lined up because here we were just like whooping and hollering because, you know, we Hufflepuffs know how to have a good time. And we're just woo down the hallway through. And of course, we're in Vegas. So, you know, they're used to that noise. And there we are just going down and going through the hotel and all the fans gathered around. And it was just, and then we did the Hufflepuff. Woo! I love that cheering thing. It was great.
Poor stuttering Hufflepuffs.
You know what? Hufflepuffs are a happy, supportive bunch, you know?
Yeah.
So it is natural that my house do cheers. So that is one of my all-time favorite fan moments, fan stories, that the Hufflepuffs got to have a parade. Yeah. We were not sitting at the sidelines this parade. Yes.
Yes, indeed. I think a lot of the best fan stories happen at these fan conventions.
Brilliant.
That's when you get them all together. The only other times you can get them all together, or at least some of them together, are premieres and book launches. And when you have them together for as long as you do over like a weekend-long convention or something, then you're going to find some crazy stuff.
Kristen, did you go to Witching Hour?
No, I wasn't able to. I had a friend getting married that weekend. I hear it was a lot of fun, though. And that was Salem, right?
It was. I would
love Salem. Love that area.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just so cool. But you got to go to Phoenix Rising, right?
Phoenix Rising was fantastic. I had a great time.
Cool.
It was wonderful to be in New Orleans too. What a great city.
Yeah.
Did that meet your expectations and seeing so many fans together and just?
Yeah, you know, it was a little bit weird because before then, so my air quote fan experiences air quote had been, you know, either meeting great people that I discussed things with online or once at work, when I was editing more on Leaky, someone I used to work with sent an email and said, "Oh my God, are you the person at such and such workplace?" And was a total fan, and we worked together and had no idea. So wow,
kind of
a weird, surreal moment. But to see that many people in one place was just fantastic.
Yeah.
So yeah, it totally met my expectation, and I would love to attend another one.
Yeah, wow.
Are you guys both doing, I guess Terminus is going to be in July?
Yes. Rocking the house, baby, at Papero House.
Yeah, I mean, and there's several more coming up, too.
Yeah, we got Portis coming up, too, in Texas.
And then there's Level 2, and then, how do you say Infinitus in 2010 for some unknown reason that something cool is going on there.
Some kind of.
And what's the one in Oxford, England?
Oh, that's Accio or Accio. Accio 2008. Yeah, that's right. And I would love to go over there. It's at Oxford University and Magdalen College.
That would be great.
Oh,
wasn't there supposed to be another convention alley too? Is that still on?
You know, I have not heard about that. I have been trying to find out information. So if there's someone that's involved with that, could you please email us? Or because I would like to post it. We just don't know. So that would be.
Yeah, we haven't really received any emails on it, but to my knowledge, it's still going to take place, and that'll be in Canada, I think.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Like July or August next year.
Yeah, our fandom, baby's still chucking along. Go, go, go.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
Got a lot of steam left yet. Yeah. That was the really dorky thing to say. Where did I get that from? Steam left.
Oh, it's the end of the wrap-up.
No.
I can hear the drums already. Thanks, Special K.
Thank you, Kristen.
John, thanks, Sue.
See you next time.
Bye. You guys take care.
Bye-bye.
Here's the mail, it never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
And it's the end of the show. Oh, Lordy.
No, I'm still reeling from the Dalish getting pwned by Grubbly Plank and Flobberworm.
You know, he will have his day. I promise you.
It was so awesome.
I am highly confident in this fact.
No, I mean, people think that we're nuts, but we actually do talk about this when we're not on Pottercast.
This is true.
That dude is going, I mean, it would be funny, though, to see Flobberworm take him on.
What's a Flobberworm going to do? It could crawl up in his nose and suffocate him to death in his sleep.
You don't know, but it could be like they could magically, like someone could like magically, you know, like put a hex on it or something and like, you know.
Like he gorge you a Flobberworm and he could just smother him to death?
I mean, it'd be a Death Eater total thing to do to like Imperio a Flobberworm and like attack Dalish. It'd be like one of those like B-movies,
like,
you know, like the attack
of like
a Flobberworm.
Slimer and Ghostbusters.
It would be awesome.
You gotta float around and drive a school bus. Well,
what a fun show this week. Yeah. Hopefully all you guys enjoyed the interviews with the organizers of the two big fan conventions this year. Definitely encourage you all to check out their websites, which will be in the show notes this week, and look into registering and attending either one or both of those conventions. See where your friends are going, see what's going on, see in detail through their site if their programming is cool in your eyes and meets your interests, and make your choices there. But everybody is welcome. Any fans of Harry Potter will enjoy themselves here.
Oh, they're wonderful. Like I said, Lumos was my first experience, and I have met people there that I think I will be friends with for the rest of my life. And it's just unbelievable. Well, let's see.
Any other announcements,
you know,
Susie?
Next week is Thanksgiving, isn't it?
It is. It's big turkey days for all of us people not in the Yuck.
That's right, not in the Yuck.
Or anywhere else.
Or anywhere else, but it's turkey day. Do you cook for that?
Do I cook, Sue? Come on.
Well, I don't know if your mom is like going to say, okay, I'll do the turkey.
Oh, well, no. Normally my family would cook, but I'm spending the holiday with my special lady friend, Miss Bree,
girlfriend.
And our family. I get to meet the folks and the grandparents and everybody else.
Have you warned them about your Dalish obsession?
I mean, you know, what do they need to be warned about that for?
I don't know. Do they know that they're serving you a special burrito then? For?
No, I'm going to suck it up and eat like everybody else and eat the turkey bird. You know, I love Thanksgiving food. Are you kidding me? I love Thanksgiving dinner, and I love after Thanksgiving Day lunch.
Yeah, it is. Isn't it best?
The best turkey sandwiches ever, I swear.
It's true. Especially.
But I'll give everybody a tip.
Uh-oh, okay. Let's hear it.
If you're already going to have delicious turkey and delicious dressing, delicious stuffing and cranberry sauce and mashed potatoes, you put the potatoes in the sandwich.
Oh!
Do not ruin your sandwich by using crappy Wonder Bread or some nonsense. Go to the bakery. Get some fresh Italian bread and slice it up yourself. Mm-hmm. Give it a little toast in the oven. Put the bread, you put some cranberry, and then you put the turkey, and then on top of the turkey, thin layer of mashed potatoes, if you make good mashed potatoes. And on top of that, a little gravy, and then a little stuffing, and then you somehow manage to put the other piece of bread on and shut it up there good. And I swear, Thanksgiving and sandwich, and it's a bomb.
Thanksgiving in a sandwich. There we go.
And that's my public service announcement for leftover Thanksgiving food, because it's not to be missed. And if you're going over to families' houses and it's not your own house, be sure to try to sneak in some leftovers when like a paper plate or something in a Ziploc or Tupperware, because you will be sad if you can't eat more the day later.
Have you ever done that?
Oh, you poor people in the archive, feel terrible for you. Yeah. You should cook turkey that day anyway.
Yeah, they should, you know. Why not?
Yeah.
Oh.
Do they have a holiday comparable to Thanksgiving?
No, I should know this, but I don't. I honestly don't. I'm sure now people...
I love my English food, too.
Oh, I do, too.
It's a little different.
Yeah.
Anybody who introduces me to eating beans at breakfast wins my vote for ingenuity at mealtime.
I want to go over there and like spend like a month, and then I want to go spend like 3 months in Scotland, because I love Scotland. I'm fascinated by it.
It's all gorgeous out there. I can't wait to get out there someday.
But I don't know if they have that. I know that Canada has a Thanksgiving Day, but I don't know. So people of the UK, please write us. I know that they have just a bonfire day when they burn some dude. I don't know what his name.
No, the Guy Fawkes Day, isn't it?
Yeah, him. Yeah.
It's always remember the 12th of November.
Try to remember.
It's not the 12th. What is it?
I don't know what it is.
It's the 5th or the 15th?
It's the 5th, I think.
The 5th.
Hey, since it's Thanksgiving, and then after that, you know what happens. It started this Christmas shopping season, the holiday shopping season for everybody, and it's just...
Black Friday?
Yeah. And you know what you can buy instead of going out to the mall? In the comfort of your home, you can click
What's
on
that?
Get help charity and get some great holiday music.
Yeah. Buy Jingle Spells. Right. You know what you should not do on Black Friday?
What's
that? Do not buy any DVDs, any television shows from iTunes, or anything else of that nature until those poor writers over there can finish their strike.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
Yeah.
And that's solely the views of this guy. And perhaps Sue.
It is me, actually.
Not necessarily represent the views of the Leaky Cauldron. And this and that.
I mean, I understand that the studios have pressures too, but I really, obviously I care a great deal about literacy and writing, so I'm
4 cents on the dollar. Come on.
No.
And the internet, look at us. Look at us podcasting.
Yeah, I know. I just want
internet,
to get them done. I want my shows
is
back.
The way
come
of,
on, the
is the
out.
Way of media for the future. So, anyway, we'll hop off our pedestals
yep.
here.
Move along. Hey, I have
and,
to go write down this recipe for
to do to you guys.
Thanksgiving in a bun. What is it?
Not in a bun. I guess it would be good in a sub because you're going to be able to close it a little.
No, it would be a little more compact because that mashed potato would, like, drip out. It'd be all, like, slimy.
No.
Like,
if you have drippy, slimy mashed potatoes, then you need to be whacked across the face because those are not mashed potatoes, darling.
Those are
slime potatoes.
Mine come in a box, and they're just fine.
No, Susie, it's Thanksgiving Day. You need to boil your potatoes.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to get up at, like, 4 a.m. I've done that.
What are you talking about, 4 a.m. potatoes?
But you have to get up to 4 a.m. to put turkey
in. It takes a half hour to make potatoes. If you can spend all day on turkey.
But you got
to
get up, and it's just so much work. I burned my pies,
up.
Too. Pecan pies, and of course, it might have been too much bourbon in them, but I don't know.
All right. Guys and gals and ladies and friends, thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone. And for those of you celebrating Thanksgiving here in the United States, may you have a very joyful
have a happy,
and
happy time.
Bye, everyone.
Bye,
Bye
guys.
We missed it.
W3.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
This week's podcast was produced by the Podcast Trio and Steve Bonnet. The show was edited by Steed, Hildy, Samantha, and Liz. Thanks to our Scribby 5 team, Aaron and Nina, and thanks, as always, to our awesome transcription elves for transcribing this and all our other episodes on podcast.com. For more information about the show and how to contact us and be a part of future episodes, visit podcast.com.